If we don't do better in battling this scourge of narcotics, it has an adverse effect on your future. Threats to the environment. We're seeing now an oil spill up in Alaska, but there's many, many other global warming and things that really do seem remote but have a vital effect on the kind of century you're going to be living in. So we have to address those problems. And that's the role of a president, and certainly it's the role of the Congress. And I'm still intent on working with the Congress to move forward as we get closer and closer to the next century. I think, from what I'm told about you all, that you are much more aware of these things than the average young person in this country. This close-up program is a great place to hone your ability to think, to question, to form reasoned opinions. And I want to find out about that in a minute, because I'm told this has been billed, for me at least, as a listening session. And so I hope you will, give me your ideas, and I'll try to conduct the discussion in such a way that you feel free to do that. When you understand our political traditions and the questions of public policy, you can ensure that we preserve what works and that we work for change where it's needed. In my book, that's the best kind of citizenship. Government is not a spectator sport. You got to be involved. It needs people, bright people like you, to make it succeed. And so you have it within in you all to be leaders in the next century, wherever you decide to apply these talents. I don't want to say just public service or just politics, because one of the themes that I'm talking about a lot and believe in is this concept of a better educated America. And that leads me to encourage those in the teaching profession to be the very best, and then to encourage people to go into that profession as well. It takes hard work, all of this. It means asking questions of people. It means looking deeper. It means investing time and energy to learn all you can, now and in the future. You never stop learning. Heavens knows, I hope I don't. We've had fascinating meetings today on a wide array of subjects important to. Education is all about this, and I've been proposing new ways to make the schools more responsive. I really believe that choice is important. People are chosen, but in those that maybe aren't chosen. So we got to find ways to encourage choice. I want to encourage excellence through programs like merit schools that some of you are familiar with, giving awards to outstanding teachers. The major responsibility, incidentally, as you know, in education lies at the local and state level. The greatest percentage, an overwhelming percentage of the funds come from the local and the state level. But we can, even in these tough budget times, give a system of awards for the outstanding teachers, thus giving them hope. Others seeing them trying to aspire for the kids. So I believe in accountability. I think the educational process has been somewhat devoid of accounting for its successes and failures, and I'd like to see that. Over the past year, I've asked teachers and parents and administrators, political leaders at all levels, to get involved, and they are. And I think it's beginning to show what's been going on the last few years in striving for X schools. And they exist to serve you, and you have the right to demand the schools, and you can expect excellence from your schools, and you can make them work for you. So like it or leave it, it's like it or help change it. And you're the bright, and I hope that you'll never lose interest in the school self. I wanted to meet with you. These are what I've spelled out here on education and others as well. I am told that you have ideas, so why don't we get ahead with the give and take, this where you tell me what's on your minds. I noticed some notes. It's always formidable when you see notes having been written down here, but it's a good time to speak to me, and I guess with these cameras listening, be sure never to end your sentence end a sentence with a preposition, because it will be duly reported all across the country by these guardians of the. But nevertheless, really, feel relaxed about it, and I hope you'll fire away. And I guess I get to sit down and listen to who I'll conduct this. But yeah, just go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Molly Evans, and I'm from Worcester High School in Worcester, Ohio. I'd like to thank you first for allowing Close-Up the opportunity to question you.
I'm questioning you. You got it wrong, Molly. Go ahead.
I'm Okay, Mr. President, in the past, the schools have traditionally held jurisdiction over the educational issues. But now that it's become a serious national problem, do you believe that the federal government should have more power on making decisions over the educational issues?
No. I don't believe that the power in determining curriculum, in determining teachers' pay, in determining standards for schools ought to be set by the federal government. I believe in the genius of diversity. I believe that one set of standards has much more applicability to one area than to another. And so I don't think the federal government should be looked to as the final arbiter or the one that's going to set the policies for the local school district. I believe instead in more parental participation. I believe in local school boards having the final authority and state departments of education having their say. And the federal government, which provides 7% of the funding as opposed to 93% coming from other sources, has about that percentage in terms of, you know, dictating things. I don't see the federal government in a dictatorial role. I don't see it as the dominant role. I see this pulpit here, what Teddy Roosevelt referred to as the bully pulpit, being used to encourage excellence, encourage choice, encourage the good teachers, but not dictate to the schools. Way in the middle back there. Yeah. That's you.
Thank you. My name is Jennifer Bean. I'm from Danvers High School, Danvers, Massachusetts. I know Mrs. Bush is involved in the campaign against illiteracy. There are many high school students that graduate from high school and are functionally illiterate. As the education president, what are you going to do to eliminate this problem?
I don't think the federal government can eliminate it. I do think it becomes the responsibility of everybody. And we are unveiling a program in a week or two that I've talked about earlier called Youth Entering Service. It's a concept of one kid, a bright kid, you perhaps, helping somebody in another area that doesn't have the advantage that you've had in terms of education. My wife is involved in this whole, you know, concept of fighting against illiteracy. She's encouraging corporations and others to be thoroughly involved. You may have seen some of the pro bono advertising on a couple of the networks in terms of fighting against illiteracy. So I think the federal government has a substantial role. I think in the programs the federal government does do, that it can put emphasis on stamping out illiteracy. But again, I'd be misleading you if I had you believe that the problem could be solved from the White House or from Congress itself. It can't be. It's got to have scratch one newsman. And it's got to... Does anybody get hurt? But that's the way I look at it. And so I will be encouraging. It's hortatory. It is encouraging every way we can. And when I talk about accountability, promoting those who you might be classmates of yours that you know can't read, doesn't do that kid any good. Needs special training, special help, special concern. So we've got to do better on it. But the federal government can help, can exhort, but can't solve it alone. Right there, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is David Harden. I'm from Verizon High School in Scottsdale, Arizona.
The drug Where's problem, your suntan?
I get sunburned.
Nice.
The drug problem that's infiltrated the United States educational system has proven to be a catalyst that's destroying the American youth. What do you think needs to be done to solve this problem?
Well, we're making a whole new push against the scourge of drugs. The Congress passed legislation calling for a drug czar. You're all bright students of history, I'm sure, and why we use the term czar in the United States to determine a strong leader, I don't know. But nevertheless, we're implementing that legislation as best we can in the executive branch. The appointment of Bill Bennett, who I think set very high standards for education, shows that I think that a lot of the drug problem can be solved through the demand side of the equation, through teaching, through education, through getting peer to stand with peer and say, no, we can't go forward with it. We got to change the culture that condoned the use of narcotics. Yesterday I challenged, through a meeting somewhat like this, challenged the entertainment media, who heretofore has almost condoned the narcotics by emphasizing the silly side of somebody being high on some substance or another. So we got to change the culture, we got to change the demand, and at the same time we've got to have much more enforcement of laws. We may need new laws, but we have existing laws that have not been enforced in terms of drug use. We're going to have to expand our prison space because it is frustrating to a law enforcement official who lays her or his life on the line to make a bust and then see that person out on the street again because there is no room in the prison. I believe severe sentencing is called for drug kingpins. We've got to do more on the sentencing side, more on the enforcement side, and then we've got to do an education side, and then we're trying to step up our cooperation with South American countries, particularly in terms of interdiction. Somebody asked a question yesterday, and maybe it's on you all's minds, about closing the borders or fortifying the borders. We can't do that in the United States. First place, the borders are too long. We don't have that much money. Secondly, that isn't the concept we want with friendly countries, Mexico to our south, Canada to the north. But we've got to do better in terms of interdiction. Last point, we are not going to solve the drug problem by stopping the flow. It's not going to be solved. In my view, it's going to be solved. That'll help, but we got to do more on the demand side. And that is where both sides, incidentally, our new drug czar, Bill Bennett, is working on. And for those of you who follow the intricacies of government, it isn't that easy, because he is dealing with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary and the Attorney General and the Secretary of State, and they are statutorily in command of their departments. So he comes in working for the President with the cabinet rank, but without the statutory power of some of the cabinet officers. So he's got a job of persuasion and coordination. But we got a man, if anybody can do it, he can. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Chandra Miles. I attend Crenshaw High School in Los Angeles, California. In recent years, there have been significant cutbacks in federal money for education. I would like to know, how will you address this problem, since the students of today are leaders of tomorrow?
First place, we have a crunch. I think your figures are wrong. I don't think there have been substantial cutbacks. I don't think there have been cutbacks. I think the budget for the Department of Education is higher than it was, 8 years ago or 6 years ago, and will be this time. There have been some programs that have been curtailed. There has been some means testing in terms of student loans. Let me give you an example of that. I don't believe, as president, that the federal government has an obligation to pay for the education of all kids that are qualified to go to college. That's my philosophy. What I ran on, with kind of an underpinning of that, in terms of being elected by the people of the United States to be president. I do think that the federal government has a role in helping those who can't afford to get to college. And so tightening up on the means test for student loans, for example, was considered by some to be cutting educational funds. And I'm sure some programs have been taken out. But generally speaking, I just come back to the fact, and I don't know that you all knew this, that, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on the figure, 93% comes from all sources and 7% of the funds come from the federal government. So in times of tough budget money, I've got to get this budget deficit down. The best hope antidote to poverty is a job, and the best way to have a job is to have a vibrant economy. And this gets into the whole economic question, but all of which it comes back to me as president in terms of priority, get the budget deficit down. And that means we can't spend all the money that I'd like for that 7%. There are some programs I'd like to fund more, but somebody asked me yesterday, and don't think it's come up yet today, on the question of dropouts. One of my answers to that is do as much as we possibly can for Head Start. I think Head Start is a good program. And so we've increased, in tight financial times, the funds for Head Start. So, it's like, I don't know what would be a parallel in your lives, is how you sort out priorities. But I am faced with a strong Secretary of Education who says, we got to spend more for this program or that. I've got a strong budget director on the other hand saying, wait a minute, we can't do that if your objective is to get the budget deficit down. So you just do the best you can. And then you exhort, you encourage private sector and states and everybody to do as much as they can. No clear answer and a very tough and good question. You had one here. Jim, and then I'll go in the back. We're cutting out all the back bench guys. Go ahead. Do you have a question? Yeah, I thought I saw your hand up. Yeah. So now if you're too polite in life, you get stomped on. You're doing just great, but I didn't want you to have it. I thought you thought I had recognized you. Go ahead.
My name is Janelle Curtis. I'm from Bates Management Center in Dallas, Texas. And I was wondering how you feel about the federal government playing a more role in education.
More of a role? Well, I think it's got to be state and local, the way our system works, because I don't want that highly centralized control. I've confessed here to Chandra, I'd like to see us be able to do more things, but I don't want the role, I don't want education to be federalized. That's the fundamental philosophical underpinning of that I have with me as I approach public education and private education. I don't want the federal government to tell you, your school board or your teachers, what you are going to teach in class, get taught in class. I don't want them to set the pay of the from on high, Washington, D.C. We don't know much about Dallas. I do, coming from Houston. But that's my philosophy, and I think it's right. I think it's federalism, decentralization. We're strong that way. And I probably, when I was little, was wondering, why do we have all these different overlapping functions of the state government? And then I realized that it preserves our union and strengthens our system by diversity. Scottsdale having a different answer than Los Angeles and a different answer than Dallas and whatever else it is. Who's got some in the back? We got it way in. Far away. You two guys back there.
Hello, Mr. President. Thank you for calling. My name is Joseph Till, and I go to the Hawaii Preparatory Academy in Commonwealth, Hawaii. And I was wondering, I go to a private school, and my parents pay tuition directly to the school, but yet part of their taxes, which they pay to the federal government, goes to the public school system, even though I do not attend a public school. Should they get a tax break on that?
No, they shouldn't. And I think it is the obligation of all taxpayers to support a public education system. We want it to be the best, and I think in many ways it is the best, although I'm disturbed when I see some kids underachieving, not being able to identify where the United States is on a globe or something of that nature. But no, I think that's your parents' choice, and I think that they shouldn't. I have been intrigued with the concept of tuition tax credits, and some say, well, that includes parochial schools, and I've said yes, but the problem again is that we are, and that gets really to your philosophical underpinning of your question, can't afford to do that. But so I think that everybody should support the public school system, and then if on top of that your parents think that they want to shell out, in addition to the tax money, tuition money, that's their right, and that should be respected. But I don't think they should get a break for that. Yeah, wait a minute. Have this guy back here.
You have time for only one more question, sir.
All right, right here. I identified this gentleman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Max Kellner. I'm from Cairo, Egypt. And recently there's been a lot of publicity about the advantages of studying abroad, especially in your college career. The advantages would be traveling, being exposed to new cultures, etc. With your interest in reviving education domestically, do you support this?
Yes, I support it, but again, we're talking about sparse funds. Not only do I support it, but I think it is enormously useful for our foreign affairs and for understanding around the world about the United States of America. So I strongly support it. One of the things that, in my background, that really helped shape my life a lot was living in China. Right after the Cultural Revolution, right before the Renaissance or before capitalistic or quasi, you got to be careful when we talk about China, quasi-capitalistic experimentation, incentive, moving away from the commune system for farm. And living there was very helpful to me and broaden, I was an ambassador, but broadening out my own horizons, understanding the importance of China in the world scheme of things. And I think it's true for students. I think not only does the student himself or herself gain a dimension on the world it might not have otherwise, but I think the people with whom you interact abroad do. And I strongly favor, as much as we can afford it, bringing kids from other countries over here. I believe firmly that any student that comes to the United States can no longer return to his or her country without some respect for democracy, for the underpinnings that I talked about in the remark. You can't do it. You come out of a totalitarian system and you see the freedoms that you and I take for granted every day in our lives, see them every day, one way or another. You see the bounty of this country, and you see the concern that Americans have for their fellow American, and it's bound to make an impact on them. And I hear all kinds of griping about the United States all over the world, and I've traveled to I don't know how many countries. No, I would guess, well, as vice president, it was 85, just in that one job, and then I did business all around the world, from Brunei to the Persian Gulf to South America. And you hear complaints about the Americans, and you sit around and you interact, but you also have a sense that people say, yeah, we may be griping about it or criticizing, but we'd like a little piece of the action. And the more those students come here on the kind of thing you're talking about, the more understanding they have about us. And it is a really remarkable thing. And I saw that most when I was the ambassador at the United Nations, interacting with then the ambassadors from 134 countries. And we were, you know, the host country. We got to know a lot of them. And you just, I know that that the point you're bringing up is, I guess by the question, is very, very important. And so I would encourage not only travel abroad, but I would try in every way I can to do as much as we can do in terms of support for these people going to different countries and bringing students here. A lot go to the Soviet Union. They have a very active program of taking people, particularly from Eastern Europe, but it's much more widely spread than that, to the Soviet Union. And until recently, I think that could have been in some ways counterproductive. They have a big propaganda thing in their education, major propaganda offensive, but then when those kids get back home and then they interact with freer countries, it rubs off pretty easily. Today in the Soviet Union, they're still doing quite a bit of this, and I'm sure that the students going there see it ferment, a change that's taking place through both perestroika and the openness in glasnost. So I would encourage people doing it. I would encourage those foundations, International Education Institute, and those things that help bring people to live with American families. Federal government has some role in this. And I think it's very important, and I wish I had time to ask you what your view is, because I would expect it would parallel. I mean, I've been to Egypt, and I think there is a good feeling in Egypt about the United States. There's some concerns about certain aspects of our policy that I'll hear about next Monday and Tuesday when President Mubarak is here, right in this very house. But I can tell you, here he is, president of that country, coming in for Sadat, and there's a certain feeling the United States can affect change. The United States can move things forward in the peace process. The United States has a certain economic system that we'd like to aspire to in Egypt. And so, never apologize for it, and share it, spread it around as best you can, goodwill that comes from being very bright, bright kids. Share it with foreigners as much as you can, because we are, I'll still say, and I got accused of being a little bit overly patriotic, but I've been to these lot of them. We are the freest. We are the most honorable and caring the most country, I think, in the whole world. And so we ought to have others understand that. And I will say this, that as president, you know, they ask, well, what is your main priorities? We talk here about education and civics and all of that, but I want to try hard to enhance world peace. We talk about a new century. How old are you, Aaron?
17.
Okay, 17. Year 2000 would be 28. I'd like to think that because we were here and worked the problem hard, that the world will be somewhat more peaceful. And let me say this, that the changes in the Soviet Union are encouraging. I'm an optimist about it. So we'll slowly find out exactly what we wanted to follow. But if those changes keep going forward, you guys have a much better chance to, I don't need that, live in a, in a more harmonious world. So we'll try our hardest and you all stay involved.
Mr. President, on behalf of all of us at the COSEP Foundation, these young people and young people throughout the United States, I know you understand how wonderfully motivating your exchange of ideas has been, and your special focus on education is inspiring, and we thank you for your time today. It's been very, very helpful.